Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bride.
Well, Steve, it is Thursday, but on Wednesdays we wear pink.
Okay.
Do you know that reference?
No.
That is, of course, a Mean Girls reference.
Oh, yes.
Which seems to be what, according to Rand Paul, is happening to him.
He's so sad about this. Well, well, he was sad about it. Apparently there's some reconciliation happening.
There seems to be a misunderstanding, potentially. Welcome to Point Taken. It is Thursday. Steve, how are you feeling today?
I'm good. Two shows, then off to Scotland.
You're really antsy.
I am. I'm fully packed. I'm ready to go.
Mm-hmm. All right. Good for you.
Going out to dinner tonight.
We got one more show with the boys tomorrow.
Yeah, Bill and Joe tomorrow on Friday. This is the last show before Joe has the big vote this weekend. And you and I are both on the record. I'm not a Democrat, and you are. Well, you're sort of an independent now.
Yeah.
Joe's our guy for that position, chair of the Democratic Party.
Not that it's up to us.
But. Yeah, we have no say. But I'm telling you, if you're a Democrat, if you're heading up to, where is it at? The Dells, right? If you're going to the Dells, Zepecki's your guy.
We don't want another Ken Martin situation.
No,
we have someone who doesn't know how to lead the party. Anyway. All right. Boys will be here tomorrow. We got a full show today. We're going to be talking about Medicaid. We're going to be talking with Jeremy Janine because it is Thursday about some local Milwaukee stories this week. Saw Jeremy Janine last night at the night market, which was very fun. Congrats to Westtown Association and another.
Jeff Sherman.
Yeah. It was really fun. It was hot.
It was very warm yesterday.
But let's get into it because. It's just, it's not consequential whatsoever, but Rand Paul went on record yesterday voicing his dismay over the pettiness of being disinvited to the White House picnic.
You know, it's kind of a great time of the year in the summer. My family comes up. My son and daughter-in-law and grandson are coming up because we were going to the White House picnic, but I've just been told that I've been uninvited from the picnic. I think I'm the first senator in the history of the United States to be uninvited to the White House picnic. The White House is owned by the taxpayers. We all are members of it. Every Democrat will be invited. Every Republican will be invited, but I will be the only one disallowed to come on the grounds of the White House.
Do you buy that? Is that like true? I have a hard time believing someone said you can't go to that because it is bipartisan.
He went to pick up his tickets.
And they said no.
He said, this was the other quote that we don't have as for the audio, but he said, we just tried to get our tickets. And they said, you were not invited, Paul told reporters outside of the Capitol. But now, just if anyone was really worried about this, if this is not going to be the epic fight that we saw last week between Elon and Trump, because this morning on True Social, President Trump said, of course, Senator Rand Paul and his beautiful wife and family are invited to the big White House party tonight. He's the toughest vote in the history of the U.S. Senate. But why wouldn't he be? Besides, it gives me more time to get his vote on the great, big, beautiful bill. One of the greatest and most important pieces of legislation ever put before our senators and congressmen and women. It will help to make America great again. I look forward to seeing Rand. The party will be great.
You know, one of the dirty secrets about Washington, D.C. is even though these senators and congresspeople are used to getting, you know, special treatment all the time because of who they are and what they do, they love this kind of stuff. This is a big deal to get those.
Like the parties?
Yeah, they love the fancy invitations and being on the list, you know, the special list. And I've been in the White House probably a dozen times and getting in that line to go to something.
Are they fun? Like, what have you been to?
I've had the mayor's conference. I went to, like, 4 or 5 years in a row. You're invited to the White House. You meet the president. You get to wander around all the rooms. Some of the stuff that's not open to the public generally. It's pretty big deal. The food's amazing.
Okay.
They give you the candies. Every president. Did you know this? Every president has a specialized candy that they distribute.
I did not know that.
I've got a few of them. I think I have Obama's. I think I have.
Are they like chocolate molds?
They're whatever they. One is a Hershey's Kiss. I think one is like what was the other one? M&M's sort of thing. It's unique to each president. And there's actually
which company owns the contract for that?
I have no idea. Well, one of them, Hershey's, probably, right? Hershey's Kiss?
But M&M's is Mars,
I don't think there's an exclusive. I think it's just whatever the president likes.
What do you think the president likes? We know that he likes Pepsi or Coke.
I think he's a Coke guy.
He's a Coke guy.
And he certainly loves McDonald's.
I
don't know what his candy of choice is.
Because it's like, I feel like most people are either a sugary, like, Yeah. Mike and Ike's Starburst type candy person.
I'm a big Mike and Ike.
That's
fan.
What I am. Yeah. More than chocolate. If I had to choose between
I love both.
A bag of Skittles and Red Dye 40, I'm choosing that over Hershey's Kiss.
Give me a good piece of dark chocolate.
Is that your top?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
That would be my thing.
But anyways, it was just, it was funny because some of the quote went on just to say that Rand was like, this is what made him lose respect for the president, not everything else that has happened over the last decade. But I don't know. Is your response to this was basically, don't whine about this in public?
Yeah, what are you doing? You look like a little baby, a little whiny.
A word you're not going to say on the air.
Yeah. It's like, why do we got to take a break. But after the break, why this stuff is happening, like is being played out in the media, is because this is what they do in Washington. This is classic Washington, D.C. stuff.
And so this is what I'm saying. Like, is it just a whole big Mean Girls thing?
Yeah, it is.
All right.
Gina, you're wearing sweatpants. It's Monday.
So that's against the rules, and you can't sit with us.
Whatever. Those rules aren't real.
They were real that day I wore a vest. Because that vest was disgusting.
You can't sit with us!
You can't sit with us, Rand! This is Point Taken. We'll be back after this.
I've had very productive talks with the president in the White House last Wednesday, yesterday the vice president, and I think the good news is we're heading in the right direction here.
Guess that hard no is not a hard no anymore, and maybe Rand Paul's even going to come around. It's amazing how this is the thing that drives me nuts about Washington. Last week, this thing was in trouble, you know, because they need all those votes. They don't have a big majority there in the Senate. And now all of a sudden they all fall in line. They all went to the White House or they all talked to the president and all of a sudden everything's good. And, you know, and I'm in the shoes of Ron Johnson saying this. Oh, maybe that deficit's not so important after all. And basically that's what you're saying if you just endorse this. Because what's changed in the last week? The bill's the same as it was.
I was going to say, I haven't really.
No.
Has there been any announcements of what they want to have decided on changing?
No, not on the major points. Everything's the same still. Like, what changed other than you talk to the president? And again, if you're a fan of Donald Trump, you have to appreciate, even if you're not, you have to appreciate the power of him getting one-on-one with these guys and these women and getting them to bend to his will. He is a president who has exercised probably the more presidential authority in his first, how many months? 5 months? 6 months? Than anybody in history, probably. At least in terms of what he's done through executive orders and actions and now through this big, beautiful budget bill. It's just amazing to me how they cave on this stuff. There is a recipe for success in this country, but it involves being smart when it comes to our budgets. Spending more just because you want to. And pretending that it doesn't matter, which is sort of not a Republican, traditionally a Republican or conservative position, seems sort of counterproductive, but here we are. This thing probably will get through at some point. Obviously, the reconciliation piece has to be figured out, which probably will happen. The only thing that I think is sort of in the way is there was some commentary yesterday online about the timeline looks a little shaky. And as you stretch the timeline, anybody who's worked on any budgets, either at the state level or federal level, more and more things can screw it up. News of the day, big stories that happen, people changing their minds, or some of the items being moved, shifted around. So that's probably the biggest concern that the president would have right now, that this thing doesn't get done by the 4th of July, which is sort of his goal. Mukashin spoke to that as well. That's the concern.
So I didn't keep up. I know yesterday Elon tweeted that he regrets some of the things he said about Trump.
Yeah.
Has he totally toned down the rhetoric as far as his railing against the bill
pretty
as well.
Much yeah pretty much
and now he's also fine with the bill,
and all it took for him was a phone call with I believe JD Vance and Susie Wiles. So I mean, the arm twisting is impressive.
It is impressive.
I mean, that's as good as it gets, because if that's all it takes is a phone call. Now you wonder, and the cynic in me wonders what are you giving them?
I was gonna say, like, what was the negotiation as far as
what are you giving Rand Paul, what are you giving Ron Johnson, what are you giving? Pick a senator. You know, that's the cool part. But if this
cool
thing
is cool, the word you wanted to use, the interesting part.
Interesting part.
I think unknown.
Texter said it was never in trouble. I don't know about that. It's still in trouble until it's passed.
But it's also to a certain extent because there's still the hold. I mean, potentially still the holdouts with Murkowski, Collins, and Hawley on the Medicaid side of things, right?
Yeah, it's a big part of this bill.
So it's not totally over. Maybe for the fiscal hawks who were worried about the spending and the cut's not going deep enough. Maybe they might bend, but I don't know. I mean, Collins usually bends.
So. I'll put this out to Senator Johnson or any of his staff, some of them who listen to this program on occasion. I know that because they tell me that. I'm curious, what is the give that allows Senator Ron Johnson to sort of look the other way on the deficit unless they're being promised?
Because correct me if I'm wrong, when he was back in 2017 for the tax cuts and the bill back then, it ended up being, Ron Johnson was against it at first. And then it ended up being huge tax cuts specifically for someone like the U-Lines, who are big right. Johnson donors. Isn't that kind of where the cookie crumbled?
2017.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So
we'll see what happens here. And will there be more give to benefit people who some would argue don't need that benefit? I don't know. I'm curious to see the details in this thing and whether this will move this forward. But again, nothing's done until it's done. And there's still some questions. And then the timing, I know they want it by the 4th of July. We'll ask Bill about it tomorrow because Bill and Joe are on the program. Whether or not moving it past the 4th of July out into August or even beyond that is worrisome to Bill or Republicans or supporters of the president. Interesting times in our country.
Indeed.
Do you you ever have your DNA checked?
I was going to ask you the same thing. I have not.
Okay. I have.
I know. So I'm wondering if you were worried about your data. So we'll talk a little bit more about that.
I'm not worried at all.
After this, on Point Taken. All right, Steve, what did you find out when you did 23andMe?
That my suspicion that my parents are my parents was exactly right.
Your suspicion?
Okay. I'm just teasing. No, what my genetic makeup, what I expected was exactly what I showed us.
I mean, no surprises?
No. The only thing, interesting thing, my mom's Scottish, Irish, English from that, you know, that part of the world. My dad's, you know, Mediterranean, Sicilian, Italian, and it was almost 50-50. But the interesting thing about having those pieces is you have a little bit of everything else in the world because those are like the cultural centers of the world for so long that you have a little piece of every ethnic group, little slice.
Especially the Mediterranean.
Yeah. It's
all those port cities just.
And
everyone in the Mediterranean was like, oh, you all kind of look the same. It's kind of like going to Brazil.
Yeah, exactly. which I think is a good thing. It's a hodgepodge of everything good about all those different cultures and people. So I was not surprised by my results. And you said you've never done it.
I have not done it. I think my mom... I have a package sitting at home that we got for Christmas. Well, should we? Because, you know, 23andMe, they have filed for bankruptcy. And now there is... multiple states who filed a lawsuit this week arguing that customers should own the rights to their data because part of this bankruptcy is, can they auction off your DNA data? And you say you don't care, but experts are saying you should go in and immediately delete your DNA data from there.
How are you going to find out what cousins you have around the world that you didn't know existed?
I don't know. I mean, we talk so much about our information and our data when it comes to social media. And a lot of experts also say, like, I can't believe people are just so lackadaisical when it comes to that data. But this is literally your DNA. You're not worried someone's going to clone you?
No.
You would want a clone. You should be more Steve. Hashtag more Steve, quite literally.
Quite literally, yes. I think the world would be better off with more Steve, don't you? I mean, isn't that an easy answer to that question? Come on.
Okay.
You set yourself up for that.
I know. This is what a give and take is, Steve. But... I've kept myself from doing it because it's kind of like, what is the upside of what I'm going to learn?
Well, you'll find out about yourself.
Am I going to find out I have like a random first cousin?
Oh, every family has that. Don't you ever watch
those
genetic shows?
Well, that's one of the things between this and Ancestry.com has been the rise of people finding out about half siblings and incest and a lot of like family secrets that are coming to light because of this. And I was talking to a friend that I had lunch with last week who did it. And now I forgot if she did 23andMe or Ancestry.com, but you can now upload pictures. So after she did it, she found pictures of her like great, great, great grandfather. And it's like a picture from a, you know, Sinners or something like that for as far as how old the picture is, but also kind of just the look they used to give in those old timey photos.
They always look crazy.
Because they didn't smile.
No.
But just being able to, and the pictures of her aunt from like a high school yearbook. So on one side, it's cool. It's also a little creepy as far as just the AI overlords and how much information that at any given point is out there about you.
I am surprised that I'm less concerned about this because I'm very sensitive about financial data and all that stuff. I protect it like crazy. So it's weird that I have the two different views of that to me. I just don't.
So you think the company is good, like as far as the service that they provide of being able to understand more about both your DNA and also your ancestry. You think this is a cool thing. You hope that the company survives bankruptcy. Because that's, they filed bankruptcy to basically.
I hope they do.
Hit the reset button because they're not going out of business.
Yeah. But that's just me. And you haven't done it yet. I encourage you to do it, though, even though you're worried about it. All right?
I don't know. I think I'll make my brother do it.
You go.
Because when we basically share. How much is that? Actually, it's an interesting thing from a geneticist.
I don't know if
how much
it
changes from sibling to sibling.
It does change slightly, but I don't think any of my siblings have done it.
All right, welcome back to Point Taken. Now, of course, we talked a lot about what's going to happen with the bill in the first half hour of the show. Some of the fiscal hawks maybe changing their mind about what's going to happen. But one big piece is still Medicaid. What's going to happen with Medicaid when the CBO says up to 10 million people might lose their insurance because of what's in this bill? Is that people who could be working? Is it the people who are getting Medicaid through states programs who are here undocumented? Here to talk about all of these is someone who is an expert on the topic. She is a professor, Stacey B. Lee, who is a healthcare professor at Johns Hopkins Carey Business School and the Bloomberg School of Public Health. She's worked on drug pricing, negotiation, public health policy. So she certainly knows a lot more about this than we do. Welcome to the show, Stacey.
Happy to be here. Thanks.
So I guess when we talk about Medicaid work requirements, because that is the thing that we're not cutting Medicaid, we're just adding work requirements to people who do not have children and are not disabled. So what does that actually mean for healthcare institutions?
It's really challenging. So what the big, beautiful bill is saying is, hey, listen, 80 hours a month, you need to either be working or doing something. And if you don't have, or if you're not doing that, then you don't qualify for Medicaid. Now, love the idea of that, but what that does for hospitals is, hey, listen, we now need the infrastructure to make sure that you meet those requirements. And that's a challenge. States like Georgia's Pathways had tried to implement a work requirement. And what happened is they spent a ton of money coming up with systems. And a lot of states and a lot of hospitals have antiquated systems that simply don't have the technical capabilities to run these types of checks to see if people meet the requirements.
Stacey, how much negotiation happens here? How much back and forth between the hospitals, the federal government, even in some cases the state agency? How much negotiation happens on this issue?
There's negotiation between the states, between the governors, between CMS. There's negotiation going back and forth all the time. And what happens is these requirements, while the care doesn't go away, the hospital is still required to provide the care. The only thing that's changing is now they may have to do so in a way that is uncompensated. So through EMTALA, if people come into the ED and they've been unenrolled from Medicare, the hospital still has to treat them, or they go to charity clinics. The care is still being provided. The only question now is it being done in a way that has been compensated in the past through Medicare, or does that bill rest exclusively on clinics and hospitals?
So is that when we talk about the impact of rural hospitals and having less people being insured, whether that's through Medicaid, Medicare, or on the exchange, it's because they still show up for care and sometimes emergent, like being emergency care or care that is not preventative, but it goes uncompensated. And so more and more of the rural hospitals actually can't operate because they're not getting compensated?
Well, yes. In addition to the shortage of healthcare providers, I mean, COVID has long faded from the headlines. However, that had a tremendous impact on the number of providers. And by 2030, we are going to have a deficit of well over 100,000 providers. And in rural areas, the feel or the pinch is even more acute. So now you have a situation where you have fewer providers who can provide the care. They're not being compensated for the care. So that is going to put a real impact on how care is provided and received in the U.S.
Professor Stacey B. Lee joining us on Point Taken with Kristen and Steve. We hear a lot in the conversations about the big, beautiful budget bill, about waste, fraud, and abuse in the Medicaid system, health care. Is there a lot of that? How much can you put a price tag on that or a number on that?
I don't think that the challenge is because of fraud and abuse to the extent that it's been played up in the headlines. What we want to do is we want to offset the changes that have been pushed through. And while we're not cutting Medicaid, we are increasing the administrative burden under the guise of combating fraud to shrink the number of people who can participate in the system.
And the,
so it's really not a complaint. Go ahead.
Well, I was just saying, and the administrative costs. So because it's not only saying, or you have to be able to, if you're an able-bodied person that has no dependents, you have to show that you're either doing education or volunteering or working 20 hours a week, so 80 hours a month. So there's that check, but then there's also for everyone on Medicaid, part of this bill is having to prove your eligibility twice a year instead of right now it's once a year, correct?
Yes.
So it's administrative costs, and is that at the federal level or the state level that has to both in time and money foot that bill?
It's at the state level, okay. And the hospitals don't have the infrastructure to do that. So what happens is I've got to provide the care. And that may require me to provide the care and then later chase reimbursement. And if you're chasing reimbursement for someone who qualified for Medicaid, good luck on that one.
The issue with the states is something that has come up in other arenas other than healthcare. We've seen the president say that he wants a lot, even in case of FEMA, he wants the states to sort of pick up the banner on for people that are you know facing disasters, you know, natural or otherwise. So when you talk about that issue and this, you know, specific piece of the big, beautiful budget bill, the president's term, what actually is going to play out here? If the administrators in hospitals aren't ready for it, we don't have the workers in place. We already see challenges in rural areas. How is this scenario going to play out in this country if this is indeed the way that the bill directs the future of healthcare to go?
You will see, I would imagine, and I don't have a crystal ball, but the ED or the emergency department will become the primary care for a number of Americans. And in addition to just not the providers, we've seen a real change in our immigration approach. 18% of healthcare workers are immigrants. If we really begin to have substantive change in that area, then even people who are cared for at home, people who are cared for at CNAs, those jobs will be lost. And traditionally, they've been really an entryway or an excellent way for immigrants to actively participate in the workforce. And that will change. So, you know, I don't know about making America healthy again. We are setting up an infrastructure that will result in hospitals and clinics bearing the price tag for as long as they can to provide care without a federal safety or a state safety net.
Stacey, we only have a couple more minutes with you, but as far as someone who studies this, what is a better policy to keep more people insured without it being, you know, huge amount of cost? What would you, as you far as you teach this to your students, like what is better policy that is actually attainable?
I think that tying the receipt of healthcare to whether or not you're doing charity work or working is not the right connection. Hospitals are in the business, providers are in the business of providing care. When you create unnecessary administrative burdens to providing that care. You're not, the care is still being provided. So I don't think that we're addressing this problem through the right lens. It's not like, hey, I'm not getting a nose job. Okay, I might put that off. But if I need dialysis or diabetic care, I'm going to the ED, and we haven't changed the federal requirement that requires all hospitals under EMTALA. If I come in an emergent condition, you must stabilize and treat me. That hasn't gone away. So we're not addressing the problem or even looking at it through the right lens. I'm all for having people work, but you can't tie that to the receipt of needed and necessary health care.
Got it. All right. Well, very interesting stuff. Thank you so much for joining us today, Professor.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Stacey B. Lee is a healthcare law professor at Johns Hopkins, Carey Business School, and the Bloomberg School of Public Health. We'll be back with more on Point Taken after this.
People might be wondering why we're playing Brian Wilson and the Beach Boys, because he passed away yesterday. I think he's 82, 83, somewhere in there. Brilliant musician. I was listening to the morning show with Vince and Eric, and I think it was those guys, maybe a different show, and they were talking about the fact that Paul McCartney, who is, you know, as good as it gets, said that Brian Wilson was, you know, a creative genius, and I'm paraphrasing his words, but just brilliant. And most musicians that I've read or seen talk about the passing put him in that sort of ultra elite category, and his music's spectacular. And who's not a fan of the Beach Boys? I mean, my goodness.
It's hard to not like the Beach Boys.
Yeah, they cross everything. That was my question for you when I was thinking about this. Do young, like younger people.
Like younger than me?
Yeah, like let's say 20s, 20-somethings. Do they appreciate the Beach Boys? I guess I don't know the answer to the question.
I don't know.
Because, God, they've been around. I probably saw, they used to be.
Jazz, how old are you?
29.
Do you appreciate the Beach Boys?
Well, probably not as much as I should, because I don't know.
That's an honest answer.
Yeah.
I guess they don't, but I was just going to say, I probably, they used to be a staple at the Wisconsin State Fair, mm-hmm. like almost every year. I probably saw them a dozen times.
I don't think I've ever seen them.
Really?
I don't think so. I'm not lying.
Mike Love and Al Jardine, Wilson Brothers. I mean, God, they were good. And their music's going to last forever. It's played constantly. But Brian Wilson was like as good as it gets, and had an interesting life, had a weird, I mean, if you've seen some of those docudramas they made about him and some mm-hmm. of the documentaries, he got involved with some really strange people that sort of controlled him. Drugs
like,
was obviously...
Like Scientologists?
Not Scientologists, just weird like psychiatrists and other wacky things he got involved with, which weren't helpful to him, at least according to his family and his friends. And that was just like a dark period, and he would like sit in a dark room for long periods of time. Ugly stuff. But he sort of came out of that. He had some health issues and then was starting to perform again. And, you know, I guess the message is brilliant, brilliant. They talk about, Malcolm Gladwell talks about 10,000 hours. This guy put in way more than that. And by doing the all that hard work as a teenager till late in his life, thousands and thousands of hours of music and on the composition side and the performance side, you're going to be considered a genius. And that's what Paul McCartney said about him. So rest in peace,
rest
Brian
in peace,
Wilson.
And we'll have some more Beach Boys in and out of Point Taken throughout the rest of today's show. We'll be right back.
Master of the house, quick to catch your eye. Never wants a passerby to pass him by. Servant to the floor, butler to the grate. Comfort your philosopher in lifelong mate.
God, I love this show.
People are probably wondering, what the hell are they doing on the music on this show today? Because there's always a theme to it. There's always a reason why we play this. Of course, Les Mis.
Master of the House. And Les Mis was at the Kennedy Center last night.
Yeah, attended by President of the United States and First Lady of the United States.
And First Lady. And this was after the new, is it Commissioner is the official title that he's put himself as Commissioner?
Top dog
at the Kennedy Center. And I'm going to play this clip and I'm going to get your opinion on it. Hold on.
USA! 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 USA!
what do you think? More boos or more cheers?
It's half and half.
I think it's like half and half,
why I put
right?
I put in our notes, welcome to America 2025, because that's what you get.
Yeah, it seems about, you know, one's trying to be louder than the other to drown each other out. But mixed reception.
I don't agree with booing the First Lady of the United States, though. I don't like that.
Well, how do you know they were booing her and not
I'm reading
just...
the account that says the First Lady of the United States was booed on USA Today. I guess that's why I'm saying it.
But if they walked in together...
I'm just reading what they put in the report. Okay. If she was booed, maybe she waved and they booed. I don't know. It's rather disappointing to me. Politics aside, I don't like that.
Which character do you think Trump identifies with in Les Mis?
Oh, what's the Jean?
Jean Valjean.
Yeah, that guy.
Who do you identify with in Les Mis?
I don't know the characters that well. Oh, I love that show. The people. So I'm a man of the people.
You're a man of the people.
I'm
can you hear the people sing, Steve?
Huh?
Can you hear the people sing?
Can I hear the people sing?
Do you not know this musical that well?
I don't
know.
Am I a Broadway guy?
I thought you were.
No.
That we had this in common.
No, we don't have this in common.
All right. When we come back, Jeremy Jean will join us for the second hour to talk about all things Milwaukee, what's happening, what's not happening. So stay with us. News is next. But this is Point Taken.
Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Braun.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Thursday's show, 11 o'clock hour. It always means Jeremy Jeanine at some point is going to come into this room, but not right now. Not just yet, Kristen Braun.
Not just yet.
So when we put the shows together, we always find interesting little tidbits and topics. And this is an interesting one because the president has made this proposal, but it's sort of based on something that's been done since 1990, which is the EB-5 program. It brings investors, business people. They make a commitment to the United States to hire people. I think that in 1990, at least, and I don't know if it's still the case, they had to hire 10 permanent full-time mm-hmm. jobs. EB-5, very common term across development and certainly in big cities across this country. Well, the president, you know, has talked a lot about the budgets and funding government and doing things in an amazing, big, beautiful ways. And one of his ideas was this gold card, this Trump card, buy your way into the country card to the tune of $5 million.
So currently
$1 million.
No, it's $5
million. $5
million. $5 million. Yep. The goal is 1 million yes. people for $5 million.
Which I have to say, thanks to my wife, Kathy, I did the math on that. If they sold.
So Kathy did the math.
Yeah. Because
you and I couldn't figure it out.
No,
I was trying to count the zeros.
It's too many damn zeros. It's $5 trillion. So the president has said that it would retire the deficit, but that wouldn't retire the deficit because the deficit's like.
It would make a dent. It would make a dent. If we got a million people to pay $5 million, it would certainly make a dent in the deficit.
If we did it every year, then maybe.
But, so here's the thing I was trying to look at, because at the break, I was trying to look at some of these numbers. So currently, the EB-5 program, it's the foreign investor must invest, as of 2022, must invest $1.5 million or $800,000 in a targeted employment area or rural area.
Right.
So it's obviously... The investment is a lot higher,
mm-hmm.
and as of right now, it's only reserved for about 10,000 visas per year.
Not a million.
So mm-hmm. 10,000 visas per year, and I think it's capped at like 7% of each for a specific country. Mm-hmm. So it can't be all from the Middle East or something like that.
India.
So I don't know.
India was a country that we've done a lot of this with.
What they would if they're going to obviously want to increase the amount because it would take multiple years at only 10,000 a year to get to a million. The amount that are granted every year, if it's going to take off the cap from how many from each country, the limited amount from each country. I'm trying to do the math as far as, because what did we say when we did our podcast about billionaires? There's like 3,000 some billionaires in the world.
Yeah. 800 in the United States.
And so, like, the amount of, is there a million people who can pay $5 million?
I don't know.
And
I don't think
want
so.
To pay $5 million?
Maybe there's a large number of people who would put up the money for all other, like, countries that could do that. India could do it, certainly. Or other very rich countries that have a lot of, you know, money lying around where they could actually take advantage of.
Like, sponsor people?
Yeah, but here's my question. So... whether you buy your way in, you sneak your way in, what's the difference in
one has a lot of money to contribute, I imagine.
I guess.
And this isn't unique to here, right? Like, we have the EB-5 program. Portugal has a program. There's a lot of different countries that have programs set up that if you want to make an investment in the country, whether it's $500,000, I think Portugal's around $500,000. I know Greece has one. I think Italy has one. Cyprus has one. So, you know, if you have the money, there are options for you to get another passport, get residency. Some have like full-blown citizenship, but it's not unique to us as far as opportunities are available so long as you can pay for it.
Yeah, and the president said this would replace, at least in his mind, would replace the EB-5 program. So I guess if you can show me that it works, it brings people who want to be here that bring more economic opportunity for our country and maybe some different ideas.
But the difference being, and this is not me knowing for sure, but if the investment is $1 million, is that saying you're investing into a company, into a program? You're just paying, you're
giving it to the government.
That's what the current program is.
So I guess, I suppose if the government spends the money wisely on things that would develop, you know, economic opportunity across the country, and we can all argue about that because we do every day when it comes to politics, maybe. But it's not like EB-5 sort of goes into communities. It mm-hmm. changes things. I've worked with some of these people when I was a mayor. They would ask me about opportunities, and I would say, a little over my pay grade because we didn't do a lot of that, but they're, you know, city of Milwaukee's right there, Chicago's right there. They can certainly, you know, help you with that. But, you know, whether it actually manifests to be something that's worthwhile, or are we just trying to pay down the debt?
Well, no,
deficit,
I mean,
I
think my point is, I don't think it's a bad idea. And I think it's as far as it exists already, right? I just don't know if the demand is there to meet the numbers that he's saying as far as 1 million people being willing and able to spend $5 million.
I'm guessing no. But you know what? Try it. See what happens.
I mean, the website's up. That's what we're talking about. The website launched yesterday.
There's a picture of the card already, apparently, because the president's holding it up. He's got, hey, surprise, surprise, got a picture. Is a picture of himself on it. That's another we have to spend some, let's get a psychologist or whatever to talk about the need to see one's image and likeness on every damn thing. And just what that's all about, good or bad ideas, but the image thing is something that I've always had big questions about.
You don't want your picture on everything?
No, not really.
Okay. You have a picture of yourself on your locked screen on your phone?
No.
I know some people who do that.
That's creepy and
weird. It's
weird,
right?
My picture's of my wife.
My picture's of my daughter.
Yeah.
Jeremy Janine, what's your lock screen picture?
It's my daughter.
See? There we go. None of us are narcissists. Congratulations. All right. That means Jeremy Janine is here. We will check in with him on all things Milwaukee after this on Point Taken. Everybody wants to be closer
to free. Yeah. He is Jeremy Janine. UrbanMilwaukee.com is where you can find his great work. Talking all things Milwaukee. What are we starting with today? You had a heavy roster of items on the docket today.
Let's do a traffic twofer. We have two different law enforcement things going on when it relates to reckless driving.
Always important.
Monday morning, there was a press conference to talk about what people shorthand call them red light cameras, but automated traffic enforcement.
Always controversial.
Yeah, state law prevents it, and you're like, why does state law prevented? Well, the police associations, the unions for the police officers aren't big fans because it's, in some respects, competition for them. But the mayor, Cavalier Johnson, and a growing chorus of people see it as an augment to what's happening. And that is catching speeders going more than 15 miles per hour over the speed limit and the ability to ticket people running red lights. They think they have enough guardrails, but this is now the fifth time they've introduced this legislation.
And this is legislation at the state level.
At the state level.
Yeah. I have an idea. I'm not a fan of red light cameras because I think they make mistakes. And they often confuse yellow for red. But set that aside. That's my own personal issue that I had a long time ago. Not me, but someone I was working on behalf of. Anyway, I'd be more interested in video of intersections because you can actually see behavior. Not red light, but just behavior of people ripping through stuff, albeit at a red light, but also doing other crazy, you know, things at intersections or on streets that are congested and busy traffic-wise. That's what I'd really... So I'll have focus on red light cameras, but I want to know more about that. I want law enforcement to work with the technology and say, we can see this happening. We can see the plate. Let's go after them. doesn't have to be just a red light.
That actually exists today through a couple of the MPD has a number of pole cameras that they're just cameras mounted.
Where
up.
Would those be?
They don't tell describe us. Exactly where they are.
It's you just like the dumping cameras where we don't location. Know where they are.
Yes. If you similar to ShotSpotter, which is the audio system that triangulates gunshots, when you know what to look for, you can see them. Some of the pole cameras are designed to be very obvious and they have lights on top of them. There's also these Flock cameras. Flock is the company that makes them that are becoming very popular with business improvement districts. What they do is they read license plates so they can actually find stolen cars.
Like ELPs almost?
I don't know ELP.
Electronic license plate readers.
Yeah. It's a
law enforcement already uses those.
On the vehicles, these are mounted in stationary locations to spot vehicles driving by so you can kind of keep track.
All in.
The press conference on Monday, Dora Drake, who's the state senator that's the lead sponsor of this, she really wanted to focus on the speeders, not the red light running. I think there's less of a question there of, well, did you shorten? There's a lot of people hate red light cameras because of what's happened in Illinois. They've been very bad ethical actors. There was bribery in the contracting.
Yeah.
She wanted to focus on the speeders. I think everyone can agree 15 miles per hour on a city street over the speed limit is too much. That's dangerous.
Yeah, it is.
There's no question if the light was changing yellow to red at that point. You were just simply speeding.
Can I tell you a quick story? So Kathy and I are driving back from Illinois visiting one of our daughters, and this car rips by us going about 95 miles an hour. And then 2 seconds later, an unmarked squad, lights go on. That never happens in real life.
Do you feel super vindicated? You're like, yeah, get him.
Yeah! We're like cheering it on. We wanted to speed up to actually follow them and see how it worked out. I love that.
Here's my question. What are the current laws when it comes to one front license plates, right? Because you don't have to have, you have to have a license plate on your back, but in Wisconsin, you don't have to have one on the front of your car, right?
I don't have one on the front of my
car. I think I do have one on the front of my car, but you don't have to.
I believe there was at least discussed when Scott Walker was governor in one of his early budgets removing the requirement, and based on Steve's driving, and maybe he's a scofflaw, that must have went through.
Okay, and then, but there's also, I mean, you go in and around with Milwaukee, there's a lot of cars that do not have license plates at all. How do these cameras work if there is no license plate?
Well, simply they don't work in that case.
Yeah.
And if they don't have a license plate at all, they should be getting pulled over. There's no question about that. If the plate is expired, which you will see that a lot in Milwaukee, a license plate reader still works on that. We still know who that person is.
They just don't have their new updated sticker on it.
You know what? This is one of those hours where I just give you weird stories about myself.
Great.
Another pet peeve that I have, you know, you get the stickers every year. Put them where they're supposed to be and stop slapping them all over your license plate.
Do you see that a lot?
Yes. I saw it yesterday like 5 times. Like, what do you do? It's not a piece of art. Put it in the bottom right corner, I believe, on the back license.
Correct.
Yeah. What are you doing, people? I'd pull you over just for that.
I've recently become aware of this, and it's like one of those things that once you know it's out there, you start seeing it everywhere.
You'll start noticing this.
Start noticing.
Stop doing that.
People are like making collages, and I'm like, how are we not getting any enforcement
on that? One more pet peeve before the break. I'm just going to roll them out today because I feel like it, and I've only got 2 days left before I'm on vacation.
Steve ruled the world.
What is with the explosion of car stickers on vehicles? Is this whole bumper sticker thing? I saw a guy.
You don't like the coexist bumper sticker?
That's one of them. Also, I'm a guy who ran marathons. I don't need to know that you ran 26.2 miles.
All right. Steve, enough. Calm down. We're going to be back with Jeremy Janine after this on Point Taken.
Happy Thursday, everybody. Kristen Bryce, Steve Smitty, Jeremy Janine from UrbanMilwaukee.com. How can folks, well, UrbanMilwaukee.com, and you can subscribe to your newsletter and all that.
Yes, member-supported, UrbanMilwaukee.com. We have a number of paywalled articles every week that give you extra content, and we're happy to have you on board.
It's some of the best writing on Milwaukee that you will find, so thanks to Jeremy for always sitting in on Thursday. I know you said there was a sort of a twofer on the roadways in Milwaukee.
So we have
should also say before, you do have to have a license plate in the front of your car. The text line corrected us.
Yes, and so if you see Steve Scafidi out there driving, please call 911. Don't do that.
But maybe I do have one on the front.
Something to check after the show. So we have the hypothetical, the legislative push that we didn't get to talk about it, but Van Wongard, who chairs the Senate committee that it would go through, I asked his office, what does the senator think about this? And he basically gave me a response that it was dead on arrival. So maybe possible.
Is the cameras?
Yeah, the cameras.
Cameras are dead on arrival. Okay.
But the thing that is, Van Wongard's in full support of, Milwaukee Democrats are in full support of, it's just waiting for the state Senate to schedule it for full approval, is the ability of Milwaukee to ticket and tow reckless drivers immediately after an offense, which is something they can't do now.
Long overdue.
What changed last year? In the last 2 years, I feel like there was something that changed as far as being able to tow and take a car.
There are two things that happened. 2022, the state changed the law to allow people ticketed for reckless driving, which is a specific citation under the law. You could be impounded, towed, and the city takes your vehicle if the vehicle was also unregistered. Then in 2023, it was expanded to allow the city to impound vehicles driven recklessly if they also had an unpaid driving citation and they own the vehicle. Well, that's a really small group. It resulted in like 11 people since 2023. So now the city's going to blow the doors open if the state lets them. Anyone cited for reckless driving could be towed in like a 2 year window. That's 1,200 some people. That'd be double the number of tows that have happened so far.
Who pushes back against that?
There were concerns initially from like LaTanya Johnson, who's a state senator, about some equity components and if like your teenager takes your car and as a result it ends up getting towed. But she has now pivoted and voted for this.
Oh, so wow.
There's a lot of people that were kind of like, well, I maybe have concerns, and now they're walking away that, yeah, this seems like the right thing to do.
I'll say this about Milwaukee. They are making the effort to sort of clean up some of this stuff, because I used to work on Capitol Drive. I almost got killed a couple times going through intersections when I had the green and someone else didn't. They just ripped through it. So I appreciate that they're actually, you know, paying attention. I think we talked about those bump outs at some point in the past too. That's all working in the right direction.
But it is up to the discretion of the police officer to decide what is reckless driving, right? Like, what is the actual definition and what rises to the level of this is reckless driving?
It's defined in section 346, and I only know that because I tried to decipher it a couple different times. I won't try and break it down on air. But yes, the police officer has to actually charge the person, cite the person for reckless driving. And then there's the question of, well, does the police officer call for the tow or does he let them drive away? So if the state law changes to allow the city to do this, the standard operating procedure for the police department will also have to be very clear that is it a mandatory tow in that situation?
Okay.
Or is there some discretion? And that was a big question in February when the Common Council discussed this openly with police department members. They're like, if we give you this tool, are you actually going to do it? And they're like, yes, if you give us the tool, we intend to use the tool, but we need to actually see evidence that that happens. With these other tows, with the other 2022 and 2023 change, there were people that were getting cited that qualified for tows that weren't getting towed.
Got it.
We have enough time for the bike lane update?
We do have a quick bike lane update. Last week was Bike to Work Week across Wisconsin. In 2023, Mayor Cavalier Johnson proposed that by 2026, so lots of moving dates here, he wanted to have 50 miles of protected bike lanes built or under construction. At that point, the city had just a couple miles. Well, thanks to an infusion of funds from the Biden administration, thanks to the city committing funds from different tax and criminal financing districts, he declared success last week that the city has 51 miles of protected bike lanes built. What makes a bike lane protected? It has some type of physical divider between the biker and cars. The mayor always touts the benefit not only for bikers, obvious benefit there, you're protected, but you cars, it's that traffic calming thing, which Steve was talking about, bump outs before, kind of narrowing the roadway. There's not that Milwaukee slide illegal right-hand passing.
Does he actually say, I declare success, like a pirate in a movie or something?
There was no George Bush mission accomplished.
I don't know where that came from. So I declare this is my land.
Before the mayor's bike ride, he gave an upbeat speech, and he was very clear that he had a nice printed out thing of showing where all the bike lanes are going to be and where the ones that exist now are. But he did not pound his fist out and say "are."
The bike riders, cyclists are happy. A lot of Beach Boys because of Brian Wilson's passing yesterday. A brilliant musician. What's your thoughts on Jeremy Janine and the Beach Boys?
Well, so this came up in our office yesterday, and Brian Wilson shows up in at least two different, much newer songs. There's a Bare Naked Ladies song he shows up in and a Panic at the Disco song. So that's an impressive cultural.
Brilliant musician.
Spread, yes.
Always sad when those things happen. All right, where are we going next, Jeremy Janine of UrbanMilwaukee.com?
Let's go to what was Wisconsin's oldest gay bar, which the city of Milwaukee, at the request of the petitioner, has determined is not historic, which on its face, you're like, wow.
Yeah,
how
so
we're
talking about This Is It.
Yes, This Is It, which is on was on Wells and essentially Jefferson Street right by Cathedral Square. It closed in March abruptly, and really, we've since learned that it was dying a slow death over the since the pandemic. It was just there things going against it. Demographically, gay bars are struggling. COVID-19 did not help. And then Wells Street was rebuilt. And it took a while. It's a really nice street now. Unfortunately, there's not a bar there at the moment. Although, as a tease, I think in a couple of weeks we'll be talking about a new bar coming there.
I was going to say, I feel like I've heard some rumors of people who are interested in doing something with that space.
Yes. Future Urban Milwaukee scoop there. But
okay, great.
Back to the story at hand. This is it. Not historic. Sydney, and I forget her, Sydney Foley, had submitted paperwork to nominate This Is It as locally historically designated, which the intent is basically to preserve the exterior of a building with local historic designation as it is. The challenge with This Is It is it's one small bar in a much larger building.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
If you're not familiar with This Is It, it has the historical, we'll call them stereotypes, that's not the right word, but of gay bars where there's very few windows, but there's a little bit of a rainbow display mm-hmm. on the outside. So it's kind of hidden unless you know what to look for. But it's also the bar that longtime Milwaukeeans will know as the home of Louisa's, and the Milwaukee Bar Association used to be upstairs. And the building owners, the Lee family, Van Buren Management, met with Sydney and said, hey, you know, I don't think this is actually a great way to preserve the history of This Is It. And for them, it also adds some red tape anytime they want to do anything else with the building.
And cost.
Yes. Yeah. And just in terms of time, it was cost, let alone the cost of materials. And so they got Sydney to withdraw that. And they've told me that there's something else coming. There's a new bar coming. But at the moment, there's no historic protection for that property. But again, the question of what are you actually historically preserving? Just a wall with some paint on.
Well, that's because it makes me think just a couple blocks right by your store, their Milwaukee store, that old, what was a German restaurant, right? That had that incredible out exterior that is now gone. And there's nothing even in there yet that's replaced it. But it was like, how can you tear that down? But I would be very sad if they tore down the This Is It. I mean, because also in that same intersection, they did when they were done with Wells Street, they didn't repaint the rainbow crosswalk.
Well, the rainbow crosswalks are now back. It took a little bit longer.
Good.
But they are back for Pride Month, the 2018 edition. And there's a whole lot of state and federal law involved there. But there are rainbow crosswalks guiding you to Cathedral Square, not only because This Is It was there, but the original Pride Fest, which just finished last weekend, was held at Juno Park down the street.
Let's take a quick break here. Jeremy, Janine, UrbanMilwaukee.com, Kristen Bry, Steve. Oh, you knew my last name. Point taken on 620 WTMJ. Summerfest and streetcars after this.
Everybody's going surfing USA.
I won't be surfing in Scotland, that's for sure.
Have you ever gone surfing in Sheboygan?
No.
Would you?
I surfed in Florida on the Atlantic side.
All right. Mm-hmm. Have you ever gone surfing in Sheboygan, Jeremy?
I have not gone surfing anywhere.
Mm, me either.
You should get out more.
I'll try.
I say to the guy who's like everything.
I was going to say, Jeremy and I who see each other every single weekend basically at some kind of Milwaukee event, we're the ones who need to get out more.
Yes. All right. So is that directed at me? I think it was. Yes, I felt like it was.
You were at the dump again this morning. You get out all the time.
All right. So... We all know what's coming in the next few weeks at our lakefront. We got Summerfest coming up.
The big gig.
You know, I'm a sort of a frustrated non-fan of the hop because it irritates my commute many mornings. I have to wait. They control the lights. Did you know this? They can control the lights, so I have to wait. Even though I had a green light or was ready to have a green light, the hop takes over, shuts my light down, and they get there right away. Do you believe this?
I'm trying to think of what exit you get off on that you're running into the hop to get
Why do you need to know that? Okay, I'm telling you the story.
I'm gonna ask you
it's Milwaukee Street, though.
All right. So when I was reading the story that you wrote, I think you wrote it, right?
Yes.
Okay. This does not surprise me. This is a good use of a sort of alternative form of transportation. During Summerfest, or I would think even like events, the ridership goes way up. That's a good thing.
It's a sign that the system works.
It can work.
30% boost last year during the 3 weekends of Summerfest. What people might not know if they're not regular hop riders like Steve out there, there's actually two streetcar lines in the city. There's the M line that snakes from Ogden and Prospect down to the intermodal station. There's also the L line for Lakefront, and that's the extension that opened last year, and it goes through the base of the Couture and then kind of through the middle of East Town and the tip of the Third Ward.
Yeah.
Well, that L line is, I mean, city's going to have long-term problems there because it's, unless it's extended, it's just not very useful, except when there are festivals going on. But the challenge is if you're someone like Steve and you're coming from Oak Creek and you want to take the hop, you need to know a fair amount about how the route works. And so the city's just merging the two routes together. So if you're at Ogden and Prospect, you can get on one streetcar and it'll eventually loop the whole way through the couture. So if you're looking for free parking for Summerfest, look at the Hop Rope.
What's that loop time? Like, how long would that be?
About 40 minutes if you did the entire loop.
Yeah.
Now, if you look at the route and think about how it moves, and there's arrows to show you that, it can be much shorter.
Revenue-wise, budget-wise, still losing money, bleeding money? Where are we at?
It loses money in the same way the fire department loses money, in that it doesn't bring in money to
operate.
That's
an interesting comparison, but...
Well, they're all government services. But, yes, how does the streetcar function from a budget standpoint? It's about $5.1 million to operate this year. It has direct revenue, so that's money attributed to the streetcar. Most of that is the Pottawatomie Hotel Casino sponsorship of $1.7 million. There's a federal grant in there as well, and then some other sponsorship deals. So that gap, roughly $3 million, is filled not by property tax dollars, but by the city's parking fund, which is citations, meters, parking lots, parking structures.
Whatever happened with that conversation? I feel like we covered that story at one point as far as, like, increasing parking tickets and stuff. And I was, because I'm always constantly surprised that there's certain pockets of the city where you can park and not pay the meter and be just fine. And so does that mean that there's not enough parking maids? And I feel like they're leaving money on the table if this is actually how we're funding things.
What's the key thing is, don't trust that as you're not going to get a ticket anymore, because for the past 5 years, they weren't fully staffed in the parking checking division. They are now fully staffed. Okay. And I live in one of those areas that has parking restrictions near Bayview High School. And for years, you wouldn't see anyone getting tickets. And now those tickets are coming out.
Okay.
So those people are there. Ticket prices.
Parker beware.
Yes.
Is it, I don't know this because I haven't got a ticket in Milwaukee. What's the cost of, like, if you're parked over your...
Somewhere between like $25 and $35.
A pop. That was, each one.
Yeah, that was what was shocking to me when I first moved back to Milwaukee after living in Los Angeles, San Francisco, New York, where I think that the starting ticket was $85 for a parking citation. And the first time I saw it was $25, I was like, oh my God, this is amazing.
Well, that's an interesting perspective.
But it's all relative, right? And now I'm like, oh man.
So the city of Milwaukee, compared to its peers, actually runs its parking very well. From the perspective of generating revenue for the rest of the city, not only the hop, but just transferring it to the general fund. If you're a city resident, you're benefiting from outside people paying parking tickets here.
Right.
We got to take a break?
Yeah.
All right, let's take a break. I'm going to ask you, like, look ahead. Jeremy and Janine, urbanmilwaukee.com is where you can find their great writing, all things Milwaukee. And we covered a lot of topics today, but we'll see where he's going next and what he's going to be talking about in his publication. All that coming up, 620 WTMJ, point taken.
I am Steve. There are many other Steves, but there is only one that is me. I am Steve.
So I was singing a...
Have you ever played this song?
No, of course not. I was singing a teammate's name when she came into work today, Angie, and of course the Rolling Stones had a famous song. And I said, I wonder if there's a Steve song, and because of our great ability to Google anything, GTS.
GTS.
I discovered this brilliant song. I don't even know who the artist is, but...
You're not going to believe it. A band named Steve.
Oh, how surprising. I just thought it was interesting, so we wanted to surprise you with that.
I like it. I think we
So we'll bring it back on occasion.
Yeah.
Can we cut that as a ringtone for us?
I should have that as a
Well, you don't need it. We need it.
Actually, if I could
You did that instead. That might be worse than putting yourself as your picture on your lock screen.
Yeah. All right. Jeremy Janine is with UrbanWalkie.com. I lost my train of thought there because you said that. I always love to know what journalists are like looking ahead to cover. What's the big stories this week?
Trampolines are what I'm going to
look at. Come on.
In regulating trampolines, Alderman Peter Bergelis had proposed what are essentially zoning regulations on where a trampoline could be placed.
Like personal trampolines, like the big ones you put in your backyard?
Yes. And he, one of the things is, doesn't want them in your front yard. Got to be in your backyard. Got to be, there's different, if the fence has poking pieces coming out of it, it's got to be X feet away. If it doesn't, it can be a little bit closer.
Wow.
This seems like a great law that'll never be enforced ever, but here we are.
What is the argument for this? Why does he want to do this? Why is he spending time on this?
Appearance, maybe?
I have assumptions about the why. So the Public Safety Committee is meeting right now. I was actually watching the meeting before I came over here, and theoretically, this agenda item has now been discussed, and maybe he's made his motivations more clear. One thing I did notice on Google Maps is next to Peter's house, his neighbor does have a trampoline.
Oh, yes. Yes, exactly.
I have no idea if that's
a motivator.
True, but it is a fact.
I had a trampoline in my yard because my daughters loved it.
How far was it from your
fence?
Did
anyone ever get hurt? Did you make people sign a waiver before they got on?
No. We had one of those safety nets on it. You know?
No, I know, but there's like people. There's some houses that you sign a waiver so they can't be liable if you break your ankle.
We didn't do that. And it was far. It was more towards the middle of the yard, so it wasn't close to. I don't even think we had a fence at that time. But yeah, I'm not anti-trampoline. Aren't they temporary, or do you leave them up all year round now?
We're going way too far into something.
I mean, if you're going to take up trampoline, you're going to have to do the homework on this.
How many trampolines are there? Because I feel like if you think about a city plot and a city backyard, that would take up a lot of space. Like, I feel like you see trampolines more when you're out in the suburbs, and there's a lot, like a much bigger lawn.
Well, remember, the northwest side of the city and the southwest side are much more suburban, and that's the district Peter represents, is the southwest side.
What's going to happen to that dumb, you know what, boat that they yanked out of the lake? Is that story settled, or where's that?
Well, Kristen and I have already started a bidding war because it's going to go up for an auction.
Yeah, why does that not surprise me?
Put that in your backyard.
I told Kristen one day, just take it where it's like some impound lot or something, or it's sitting in some place. Lean it up against the calling and make that a new
thing. You know what they could also do? You know how you can buy different like artwork or picture frames that are made out of the benches from old stadiums? You're like, oh, I have a piece of the old Lambo, or, you know, Camp Randall or something like that. They could make it into like jewelry and picture frames and stuff.
Bottle openers, whatever.
Yeah, they could take all those pieces of reclaimed wood and turn it into something.
Here's where I
is it much wood versus like...
It's mostly aluminum.
Plastic or aluminum? Yeah, okay.
Aluminum. But here's where I could have my mind changed. If they can monetize this and recoup all the money they spent getting it out of there, I'm a fan of doing something with it. So that's why my
wasn't donated anyways, most of the money to get it out?
Here's the math. It cost
that was a Hupe.
Did it come out? Who had actually sponsored it?
I thought Michael Hupe sponsored it.
I think that was just our guess. But it was $50,000 to remove it, and it really cost the company even more than that.
I hope I didn't out Hupe. That one.
They got $30,000 essentially in private donations. They're now trying to raise, they being the county, to raise that $20,000 gap. If you're interested in seeing the boat, you can't go to the lakefront anymore, but it is at All City Towing near 13th and Grange. And
now that we're towing more cars, you can go find it.
Do people bring like bouquets of flowers and candles and stuff put it around there?
The owner of All City Towing did invite people to come take selfies, and I've seen people take them up on it. So 13th and Grange, if you want to pay your respects.
Is he charging people for it?
He's not at the moment, but here we go. A dollar at a time. We'll get to 20,000.
Love the text line. In my Waukesha County suburb, trampolines, sheds, etc. can't be within 25 feet of a lot line. Well, in Milwaukee, that wouldn't work because those lots aren't big. And they said out there, it's the lots are pretty wide.
Yes. And I mean, we're talking about this. We already have fire pits, which are legitimately much more dangerous.
Yeah.
And there's regulations around those, and I've never seen them enforced. So with trampolines, we're just adding more stuff that theoretically exists.
And if the complaint is that the police aren't, they don't have time to do that stuff. And then like everything else you want, like reckless driving and chasing down people that are committing crimes. So maybe like back off on some of this stuff. Trampolines are just fine. We'll work out all the logistics.
This would be a Department of Neighborhood Services, so you wouldn't send a police officer out, but you'd send the building code inspector. What?
You know they'd be called.
Well, they probably will.
My neighbor has a trampoline. Come out to my house immediately. Calling 911, also bothering the dispatchers for no apparent reason.
Yeah, I did see a parking checker with a tape measure out during Chill on the Hill by my house. So
oh, my goodness.
We're getting some very precise measurements going on, but
I'll miss your updates. I'll be gone, at least for 1 week. Jerry Mangini, UrbanMilwaukee.com. Have a great rest of your week. We're done for today.
We are done.
Which means I have one show left. So for all you fans of
Wear a fun shirt tomorrow?
No.
Shirt?
No.
A Hawaiian shirt or something.
I'm not a big Hawaiian shirt guy. Although I wear them.
How about a kilt?
Hawaii. How about a
like
kilt?
A Tommy Bahama.
I do have a kilt I could wear.
Okay, wear the kilt.
I'm not wearing the kilt tomorrow. You'd be trying to. Oh, never mind. Kristen Bryan.